find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Find out about new shows, featured guests, and what's up this week. Find us on Facebook by searching keyword Voice America.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
When you turn on the evening news, do you see what you want to see or what you need to see? Welcome to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. It seems like more often than not, the good news and people that are making it are buried into a two-minute feature piece near the end of the report. What about giving these people and this kind of news a full hour every week? Now, here's your host, Mariana Cacciatore.
Good morning. This is Mariana Cacciatore, and I'm here today with Greg McGlaze, my friend and partner, to continue our conversation about kindness and compassion. 2 weeks ago, I invited Greg onto the show because, well, primarily because I find him to be a very kind man. And he's a kind man who also happens to be very interesting to talk to about this subject. Well, he's great to talk to about many subjects, but this one in particular, and the show went over really well. I received lots of positive feedback, and it felt as though, you know, we kind of just barely touched the tip of the subject when we got done. We thought, oh my God, we could have continued this show another hour. So we decided to create a second show. So if you're interested in listening to our previous show, you can find it on the Voice America website on the Variety Channel. The show aired on March 3rd. Or you can go to our Bread for the Journey's website, breadforthejourney.org. And on the homepage in the lower right-hand corner, you'll find my photo and the words tune in. Click on that, and it'll take you to a page that has the full archives of all the past shows so you can listen to any of the shows from both places, voiceamerica.com or breadforthejourney.org. So before we begin our discussion, I'd like to talk about why this subject was chosen for this radio show. I'm the executive director of a nonprofit organization called Bread for the Journey, which is why we call the show Bread for the Journey, you know, Bread for the Journey Radio. But the nonprofit Bread for the Journey was founded in 1988 by author Wayne Muller. Wayne has written many books, but his book, How Then Shall We Live, explores the subject of kindness, and it tells many stories about the work that we do in the nonprofit Bread for the Journey. We're an organization that helps people make a difference in their community, ordinary people doing good things in their community. And it's primarily a volunteer-run organization. We've got over 100 volunteers around the country. And we've got volunteers in 20 cities that give small grants to people who are doing things to make the community more beautiful, more healthy, more just. One of our founding sort of actions or principles is that we trust people within a community to know what they need. And we get behind thousands of grassroots efforts and essentially say, I believe in you. And we do it with no strings attached. Small grants are given after a conversation and over a cup of tea. Trust is established between, you know, the giver and receiver. And in truth, that line between giver and receiver disappears, and we're always sitting with the question, who gives and who receives? In other words, we receive so much from being able to help in this way. And they receive so much from being given a gift that has really kind of, that's founded in this idea that we believe in them, that we trust them, that and we give with sort of no strings attached, which, you know, solidifies that idea. So it's a practice of kindness that our volunteers are doing all around the country and what we nurture at Bread for the Journey. So, you know, kindness is a word we banter around a lot, and exploring it by talking about it is a good thing. We more consciously place our attention there. And in fact, that's the starting place. If you want to grow this seed of kindness or generosity inside of yourself. So with that, I'd like to invite Greg McGlaze to join us now on the show. Greg is a teacher by trade. He mostly taught little ones, kindergarten through third grade in Santa Monica, California. Most of his career was spent at a school called Crossroads, where he did all kinds of unique and interesting things with the kids. He did circle check-ins each morning. He invited children to tell others in the circle about the dreams that they'd had the night before. They did short meditations at the start of the circle. Sometimes they'd take a walk to the beach for a morning ritual and let that be the start of their day. So I'd like to welcome Greg back to the show.
Hello.
Glad you're here. Thanks.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So I opened with this children because I think of children as being naturally kind. But, you know, we also hear lots of stories of bullying today. And I know that kids can sometimes be cruel. How did you encourage kindness in your classroom? And how did you deal with things that were the other side of that, like bullying?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great question. Thank you for having me on today. Sort of takes me back to my years of teaching. So I've been trying to recall the kind of classroom environment I tried to set up for my kids. I know at the beginning part of the year, when we switched to a larger school and there were suddenly two third grades and two fourth grades, there was sort of this competition among colleagues to sort of what kind of classroom and what kind of, which third grade did parents want their kids to, you know, to get into and things like that. And as the school progressed, it became, it initially was a very progressive, laid back, school that took care of kids, their internal needs as much as the external achievement needs that the parents seemed to have. And as the school continued over a number of years, it switched to more about being the business of education and not what I considered to be education. So more and more, the teacher in the other room was putting up grammar lessons on the board as the kids first came in. And I was sort of the opposite of that. I really felt like I needed to fight against the fear-driven education that so many of the parents and eventually the administration seemed to embrace. I had a big board every year where I called it my smiling board. And from magazines or pictures at home, we put anything on that that would make you smile. People smiling, people dancing, dogs smiling, family photos, vacation photos. And that's what I wanted my kids to see when they first came in the morning. I wanted them to look to the left and look at the smiling board and go, oh, my gosh, I'm here. I'm in a place where I can smile and I can just be. And we were supposed to, you know, start at a certain time. I would always let the kids have another 10 or 15 minutes to just be in the classroom, to just say hi, to walk around, to talk, to sit in laps, to open a book, do what they wanted to do. I would call the class together. I guess all the things I was doing was really trying to do, trying to find a place where their internal creative intelligence could sort of be realized in a way. I guess that's sort of a large concept, but really, I guess I feel that humans in a way are the consciousness of our planet really being able to look back on itself. And that's what we're able to do. We're able to, the environment or divine consciousness or whatever has created us, and we're able to actually reflect back on what is happening. And it's a very unique kind of thing that it's a wonderful gift,
right,
that kids have, especially kids. And it seems like the external business fear structures that parents so often put on kids really diminish that. So I guess my real goal was trying to have an environment in which safety was first, that they didn't have to fear about being right, about being wrong, that they could tap their internal world, that the internal world was as important as their external world. So in order for that awareness to happen, I really think kids need space. They needed to do what they naturally did, which is want to play and explore. And at the same time, I always felt like as the adult in the room, I could set up structures that would allow them to sort of tap into that inner intelligence that I think we all have, mm-hmm. but often doesn't get utilized. So I would do quiet time. I would always call them together with a bell that I had, a gong. And then they knew that at some point in the morning I would gong, and they would come over, and basically I said, don't talk when you come over. Like, talking stops with the bell. So there was sort of a structure, I guess a sort of rigidness, but it was sort of like to get them to this other place of trying to help them be aware that thinking wasn't always going to be the answer in their lives, mm-hmm. that by thinking things out, you were basically strengthening the ego of themselves by trying to be right in so many situations, which for children is such a strong impulse to see the world in black and white. It's either this way, this way or that way. There's very little in between. And I was always trying to get to the point, because I thought ego was basically part of a human dysfunction. It sort of interfered with what I thought was most important.
Right.
That I really wanted them to get to the point where they could express themselves or hear things in a non-reactive state.
Right.
The things that were going on externally, the events, the grades, the troubles with friendships, the girls, you know, backbiting against girls because that's what 9-year-old girls do in little cliques, and boys being really competitive with sports and sort of the urge to put each other down to make yourself stronger. I tried to get them to see that all those things were not personal. You could actually just hear what was going on or see what was going on and acknowledge it without needing to be right about it, without needing to necessarily change it. So we did a trail of consciousness where on each, if there was a conflict, it was like a conflict resolution.
Mm-hmm.
They would basically just state what they thought happened. They would move to the next spot on the trail and restate what the other person had said. Mm-hmm. They would go to the next spot and, is there any creative solution we could have to this?
Mm-hmm.
And they would go to the next spot, the last spot, which was just kindness, just forgiveness, and trying to let all that just be. Like, you don't have to find a solution. You don't have to do anything yet, but you can just be open-minded about letting that moment be.
Well, you brought up some really interesting. Early on this little monologue, you talked about reflecting, helping kids learn to reflect, to witness their own behavior. And I think that's a really powerful thing, not just with kindness, but in all the aspects too, that we as humans have this ability to reflect. Mm-hmm. And you helping kids to use that skill to, the other word you used was to create safety. And when you said the word safety, I thought you were going to talk about sort of the external things we think about when we think about keeping kids safe, like, you know, mm-hmm. protection from the big bad world. Mm-hmm. But you went on talking, and you were actually talking about an internal safe relationship with oneself.
Right.
So from this foundation, the combination of these two things, the ability to reflect on oneself and you took it even a little bit further, to witness oneself in a removed kind of way. It's mm-hmm. actually very Buddhist what you were doing with young children.
Mm.
And out of that, we develop a kind of internal safety that probably allows people to explore the world in a way that gives them a kind of confidence to explore all situations, because they have that safety built in. They know where to go in order to become safe in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That was incredible. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, last week I had asked you about the influences that affected kindness in your life, and you talked about your childhood. And this has been kind of a recent last couple of years exploration for me about kindness. And I'd have to say for myself that my kindness, I'm realizing now, kind of grew out of something very, very different. And it opens up this whole thing about all doesn't it happen. You know, we all come to a place, if kindness is where we end up or where we find ourselves or exploring or we feel a connection somehow to kindness, there are lots of different ways to get there. And in my life, you know, certainly my family was a kind family. You know, I lived with my immigrant grandparents, and you know, they were just around all the time. I had lots of adults in my life. My mother was an at-home mom. My grandfather built a garden. Our entire backyard, wall to wall, was garden, and so I was like a little, you know, nature nymph hanging around. I hung out there a lot. And so, you know, my early years before school, I would have to say it just was in some ways, not in all ways, but in some ways really idyllic. Things began to break down for me when I entered school. I wish I would have been in a classroom like yours. And then
I'm thinking, excuse me for interrupting, are there some other, from your childhood, some other events that might have change your relation to your world that sort of brought you into this place? Because it seems like through the events of our childhood or major events that we all hold on to, there's a way to come out into a more compassionate, kind world. And I'm wondering if there's some things that you could address from your childhood that
yeah.
might have influenced you in that way.
Yeah, I'd love to. And it's kind of a big story, and I need to spend a lot of time on it, but I realize that we're coming close to a time for our break. So rather than dive into it and break that story up, I think we're going to take our break now. And to our listening audience, please stay with us. An interesting discussion about kindness and compassion with Greg McGlaze. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The experts. Call toll free right now. 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your questions. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you lost, fed up, knowing you're better, and yet not knowing why? Let Derek O'Neill transform the not knowing into the knowing by showing you the way. Whether it's not being able to drop the excess weight to unhealthy relationships or finances that you know you deserve, Derek provides insights that are like magnets to invite what you want in your life and repel what you don't want. Tune into Derek now to discover how to improve your life immediately and unleash the winner that you know you are and others need to see. Listen Mondays at 9 a.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Variety.
Tune in to The Hoffman Connection for inspiration, a life of passion and purpose. Hosts Raz Ingrassi and Ed McClune will bring you ways to remove the blocks in your life that are holding you back. Along with their guest experts, Raz and Ed will use their experience and expertise to help you learn to get closer to what matters to you most. And by doing so, improve your life and the lives of others. The Hoffman Connection can be heard live every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Do you feel as if your life is just filled with random awkward moments? Believe me, you're not alone. Tune in every Friday for TAG, the Awkward Girl Guide, with your host, Ashley Iola. Ashley has learned to own her awkward, and she guides you how to do the same. It's awkward, but it can be a lot of fun, too. We'll talk about relationships, sports, food, health, family life, and social life. Each show hopes to make you a bit more in control of your awkward. Tune in to TAG, the Awkward Girl Guide, Fridays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Streaming live. The leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here with Greg McGlaze and Mariana Cacciatore talking about kindness and compassion. And at the end of the last segment, Greg asked me about any events in my childhood that impacted my impacted kindness. And I did have a very traumatic event that happened when I was 11 years old. My best friend was kidnapped. And we lived in a small little town where, people left their doors open and, you didn't even think twice about walking anywhere. And even in the evening, I'd be at Susan's house and it would be dark outside and it's time to go home. We didn't have a parent who walked us home. She lived six or seven doors away. It wasn't that far away. But in today's world, we don't really do those kinds of things anymore. We don't let our kids. But in those days, it was really different. It was 1965. And Susan was kidnapped. And I didn't even know what, kidnapping was. It's pretty traumatic event. And 2 months later, they discovered her body, and she had been... she'd been dismembered and burned in an incinerator. And so you can imagine I like to call her today my twin sister of separate mothers. We were that close. And so the experience itself was incredibly traumatic. And then, of course, the response to it, it was 1965. There wasn't the kind of grief groups that we have today or even good therapy. Nobody knew how to deal with it. And so everybody just kind of swept it under the rug once it was, once we knew she had died. So, for me, I believe today in this, this work I've been doing in my life, what I believe is true is that I pointed myself toward kindness as a way, as sort of an antidote, as sort of a way to prove to the world or to balance out the glimpse of evil that I experienced. It saved my life. It was kind of a desperate, in some ways, kind of a desperate attempt to, like I said, prove that this is a good world, that people are good in the world, and people are kind in the world. And so, I didn't really get this until many years later. In my early career, I had founded a center for children and their families who are grieving a death. And then after leaving the world of grief, I went into this work here at Bread for the Journey, which is all about generosity and kindness. And then after several years here, 14, 15, I wrote a book about the work I had done with grief. And at that time, I really began exploring kind of this deeper thing about, did my life feel kind of bifurcated? It felt like there was this segment of my life that was about grief, and then there was this other segment of my life that was about generosity and kindness. And I remember saying to Wayne Muller, asking Wayne, our founder, who, has so much wisdom, and I asked him about this, how is it that it feels like my life is bifurcated. How is there a flow? And he looked at me really wisely and said, actually, there is a strong connection, but this is your koan. You need to live into the answer to this question. I could tell you, but it wouldn't mean as much unless you figured it out for yourself. And at some point, and this was all in the last few years, last couple of years, I was going through some old files, and I came across a poem that Mark, my friend Mark Nepo, had given me in 2003. It's a poem by Naomi Shihab Nye called Kindness. And I think it really speaks to what I'm talking about here. I'm going to read you two portions to the poem because it's rather long. So here we go. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go so you know how desolate the landscape can be between regions of kindness. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore, only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to mail letters and purchase bread, only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is I you have been looking for," and then goes with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend. And I remember when I read this poem for the first time, I sobbed. Well, I had read it in 2003 when Mark gave it to me, but in this last few years, in this surge, and rereading it, that was when I sobbed, because now I actually understood this poem on a deeper level. And for me, it brought together my whole life, really. It made sense of this, why I had moved from the world of grief to the world of kindness and generosity. It pulled my life together like a cloth that has no seams, rather than this thing that I've been talking about, which feels sort of bifurcated. So we all come to kindness in different ways. And, you know, just with that, I invite you, you know, our listeners, to explore for yourself your own relationship to kindness. Where did it start in you? Where do you feel you are with kindness? How is it that we might grow kindness in our life?
Well, those are great questions. You know, I was thinking about our conversation earlier about the macro and the micro of the world, of consciousness, of evolution, whether it's on a global scale or the internal world of our children that we teach. And it seems to me that what you experience as a child and what many of us can experience is that this evolution of consciousness is that really our suffering is its noble purpose. That actually, in a way, you almost have to go into grief, go into suffering, whatever we imagine our own suffering to be, to come out on the other side of awareness so that you can burn up the ego, you can get rid of fear, and come to a spot of knowing that you're in the world, that you can sense your essential beingness, the I am in the background of life all the time, if you can do that. And I mean, it would be a wonderful place. And it seems like what happened to you is through that coming out of suffering and raising consciousness in a way, whether you did it yourself or as a natural state, or you opened yourself to it and you just let your heart hurt in that way. It seems like in your life what you've exemplified with your grief work, with starting your children's center, with working for Bread for the Journey and a life of service to others, really your entire life. It seems like what you did is that you came to a realization that compassion is realizing that we suffer from the same sickness of mind, that underneath all of us in a way to come to this compassionate, kind place is that we're almost all damaged. We're all frail. We all have these fears. We all have everything. And if we can stay neutral and non-reactive and just let them be, we let a creative intelligence problem solve with us. Not that everything has to be solved, but problem be for us.
Yeah.
and I'm really amazed that it happens and the way it happened to you on a personal level. And I'm wondering how it sometimes can be transformed into the world as we leave our internal world and go out into the world from the moment we wake up in the morning to our practices in the kitchen to what we do when we go to the supermarket or we run across homelessness or other things in the world to what we do. I'm sorry, I'm asking way too many questions, but even in our business lives, the business world, the larger structures of society, how is there a way that kindness and compassion can be fostered in those structures? Because it seems like so much of the time there's this battle going on between consciousness and compassion trying to emerge and the opposite trying to balance it like you balanced evil. But there is this fear in the world. There is this greed and this sort of taking and that things are – that there's not going to be enough kindness to go around almost. This fear. This fear that, you know, kindness is going to run out if I'm too kind. So I better hold in. I can't give love away all the time. Yeah. That would be, there won't be enough ever. So I'm going to hold it for certain things. Then other events or people or organizations are not going to be lovable. I'm going to keep the, I'm going to make a judgment about them and keep them separate.
Right.
And then I don't have to be kind. I don't have to feel their pain. I don't have to do anything related to coming out to them in a way.
Yeah, that's where I think, you know, this phrase that you used here a moment ago, suffering's noble purpose. Mm-hmm. That what one of the things that suffering does is it balances our ego with humility.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, it's so natural for us to shy away from things that break our heart. We want to move ourselves in the other direction. And if any of you in our audience have attended a conference led by or read a book by Pema Chodron, who's a Buddhist teacher, you know that this is really her. She speaks about a lot of things, but this is really her primary message, to step into the experiences, the hardship experiences that befall all of us, rather than move away from them, we move into them. And it leads right to what you're saying about suffering's noble purpose. We never wish for hardship. And we don't ever wish for somebody's suffering.
Certainly not.
Ever. But when it occurs, because we live in a world where it occurs all around us, but when it occurs, it really does level people in a way that allows for one's heart to break open, which, you know, is a concept that Parker Palmer talks about in his book. I interviewed him recently as well, Healing the Heart of Democracy. We have this choice when our heart is broken. Do we let it break open? And what happens if we do is we develop a kind of humility that becomes the balancing force for ego. We need a strong ego, but if it's too big, it becomes like power run amok. And hardship kind of levels things and brings us back to this place of humility. And if we can actually get to that, touch on that humility, then we begin to develop compassion and we see the homeless person in the street and think, what can I do? What small thing can I do here? Mm-hmm. We begin to look at the free time we have in our life and we say, how can I make my neighborhood better? How can I make my community better? We begin to actually create free time in our life so that we can reach out and be of service in some way. There is a kind of oneness then that we experience with everybody in the world that we actively begin to open our hearts to. And this is a kind of the development of kindness. There are lots of ways to get there. I'm just naming one. Mm-hmm. But I think humility is really a key thing that is the gift that grows out of suffering in the world. And maybe that's really... that's a huge thing that happened to me with Susan's murder.
Mm-hmm.
But it happens, you know, we don't need to have a kind of a big experience in life to develop that. You know, there are small little sorrows that happen every day all around us. All we have to do is watch the news.
Plenty of little sorrows floating about in our world.
So we're getting close to a time for a break, so I'm going to take this opportunity to do that. Please stay with us for this enlivening conversation on kindness and compassion with Greg McGlaze. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it. That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Each week, Jimmy Gould brings you the stories and the people that you want to hear about. Tune in to A Current Life to hear about the journey to success, how our guests became the people they are today, and the highs and lows they experienced along the way. Each hour will leave you inspired and entertained as Jimmy gets up close and personal with every week's guest and shares ideas you can identify with and apply to your own life. A Current Life with Jimmy Gould airs Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Want to hear about what's going on in the world of fashion, beauty, gossip, and politics? Then you'll want to tune in every Wednesday to the Voice America Variety Channel. Face Forward with entrepreneur and beauty consultant Sarah McNamara is honest talk, great guests, and a cool vibe with a lot of fun. Sarah and her guy Friday, Anthony, will turn you on to what's hot and what's not. This is a radio show custom made for you. Tune in to Face Forward, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. in the East, 11 a.m. in the West on Voice America Variety. Professionals and families who are dealing with autism face challenges that can lead to many questions. Questions about how to understand, communicate, and support each other. Every week, Autism Today with host Dr. Patrick J. Rydell will focus on dealing with the diagnosis and the day-to-day challenges of autism spectrum disorders. Dr. Rydell will combine his 30 years of experience along with featured guests from the ASD field to provide their insights and answers to your questions. Listen every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here with Greg McGlaze talking about kindness and compassion and all the little nuances about living a life that's kind of, in some way anyway, focused, pointing ourselves in the direction of kindness so that we are more and more there as we advance in our life. And I was thinking about how is it that we grow kindness? How is it that we, you know, if we, you know, Greg was saying, you know, after doing the show last 2 weeks ago, that the whole next day he was really thinking about kindness and practicing little acts of kindness all day long. And so we got into this discussion about how is it that we bring ourselves back there again and again so that we are awake and aware and doing things in the world that are practices of kindness. And it made me think about a story that I read written by a young man named Birju Pandya, who I met through all of the volunteers at servicespace.org. If you don't know that organization and you're wanting to follow this trail that we've been talking about, you definitely need to go to this website. It's called servicespace.org. And so this is a little story that Birju wrote called The Ripple Effect of Kindness. Over the last few years, I've become a big proponent of smile cards. The premise behind these small cards is simple. Do an anonymous act of kindness and leave a card behind, inviting the recipient to pay it forward. If he or she does, the chain keeps going, resulting in ripples of kindness radiating out. Smile cards are wonderful in ways I cannot count. Small, simple, humble, yet powerful. The main reason I use them is the subtle change that has begun to occur in the way I think. And this is really why I'm reading you this story, just exactly what he just said. The main reason I use them is the subtle change that has begun to occur in the way I think. Recently, I was on a plane reading an intriguing financial book my friend had given me. As our flight landed, I felt a tap on my shoulder. It was an elderly gentleman asking for my thoughts on the book. Turned out, he had heard about it and was curious to read it. I gave him my feedback on the interesting read, but then a thought crossed my mind. Why not just give it to him? At the time, the book wasn't even available in the U.S., so I handed it over. Of course, he initially refused, but I made my best case, and after a bit of back and forth, the man accepted the book with tears in his eyes. He told me he had a hard time understanding why I would do such a thing, but that he'd pay it forward somehow. Now, in the grand scheme of things, this story means nothing. I mean, it's just giving a book to someone. Anybody can do it. But that thought, the why not just give him the book thought, was very new to me. For the few months prior, I had been walking around with these smile cards in my wallet. What initially started as a nice conversation piece at parties turned into a pile of kind acts that I just had to unload. Slowly, my perspective started shifting. Instead of looking at how I could manipulate situations to my benefit, my mind was busy trying to think of ways I could make someone's day better. The cards were a pocket-sized prompt to be a better person. I began to realize that what I was carrying wasn't just some nice cards. I was carrying the potential for generosity in every interaction. All this leads me back to the day I handed the book over to the stranger. It was amazing exactly because it was ordinary. I handed the book over to the stranger. It was amazing exactly because it was ordinary. I had experienced a moment where I wanted to give out of habit, almost as if that was the only way I knew how to respond to the situation. For that moment, there was no difference between a stranger and a trusted friend. And the most beautiful part, after I handed him the book, the person jumping around and giddy for the rest of the day was me. Yeah, and so that moment when he realized that his first impulse was to make someone's day better, to not think about what he wanted for himself or how to manipulate the situation for himself, but to make someone else's day better. It's this example of when we begin a practice, then there comes a moment when we realize, oh my God, we've made a shift. This practice has actually integrated itself into like my DNA or something.
Right.
So, you know, kindness. What kind of practices can we create in the world around kindness?
Well, I'm reminded of Bijou carrying around his card, and whether it was a way of being in the world that was going to be form-based, connected to some sort of doing and evaluating what he was doing that didn't feel totally comfortable with him, as opposed to when he was suddenly in the moment, when he was being, he opened himself up to a different way of interacting in the world. So it's not form-based, it's just being in the world. And it seems like what that does is it allows the person who receives that kindness to be recognized. It draws the being more fully into the world. And this is, according to a lot of traditions, the love that can bring the world, that redeems the world in a way.
Right,
you've been seen. You've been touched. You've been given something in the moment.
Right.
But I don't think it really comes out of thought. I don't think it comes from a thinking place.
Right, but the practice starts in the place of thought. That's right. Really it, right. Feels sort of awkward in the beginning when we do either a gratitude practice every day, making a list of all the things we're grateful for, or a kindness practice where we're doing acts of kindness, even if we're sort of not feeling particularly kind that day. And then that's exactly what Birju pointed to. Like, we do these little things, and then suddenly there's a shift that grows out of something that's not about thought. So continue with that, Greg.
Well, thought points to the truth, but it is never the truth. In other words, it can sort of guide you as a way of being, but a thought is not going to be completely guiding in that way. And it seems like thinking, and that's what I tried to get back to with my classroom, where I started getting kids in the morning to just listen to a gong, get in a circle, ring a gong, and have them not pay attention to anything else. Like, listen, don't be reactive to thinking. In fact, try not to think. In some levels, I tried to give them the idea that so much of school is thinking your way into success and reward because you've thought something or you've memorized something or you've done something or you're going to get a little happy face on papers or you're going to get a letter on a page that says A and you suddenly have a whole story behind that A. Thinking is almost like mental static. I want them to think that thinking eventually, underneath all that other stuff, thinking will be mental static and it's something that's going to happen to you. But there's another world underneath that where kindness and compassion and creativity will reside. And it's equally valid and it's not given, it seems like in our society, enough value that the piece of the pizza pie, the pie chart, for kindness, we assume is so limited, like we just don't do that. And I think I spoke to you about, like, I want a secretary of kindness at the governmental level. Somebody being in the world where that's sort of what you're able to do, not necessarily through thought, but through being in the moment, through being aware, by being conscious. And boy, is it a slow process sometimes.
It is. It's evolution. It's the evolution of mankind. Maybe we can have the Dalai Lama as the head of the Department of kindness.
Yeah, why not? That would be fun.
Hey, well, you're talking so much this non-thinking stuff. It's just so Buddhist. It's funny because, you know, you're not a Buddhist and you don't even do lots of Buddhist practices, but it's really at the heart of kind of what you're talking about, this non-thinking. And there's lots of ways to get into that place of non-thinking, and there's lots of somatic things that are happening today. There's some people just sitting and meditating is a very difficult thing to do, but moving your body in some ways.
Rhythms. And
and ritual and, you know.
And dance.
Yeah, there are lots of ways that we can get into that place of no thinking. Maybe it's a walk in nature. You know,
It always was.
Right. Walk along the beach. I can understand why you sometimes took the kids to the beach in the beginning, because that hypnotic sense of the ebb and flow of the ocean can really do it. It kind of triggers you into this place where we soften and relax and we get into the place of non-thinking.
That was where the fear structures that seem to do battle with these other passionate, open-minded structures, where I had a school where I could walk to the office and write down a note saying, I'm taking my kids to the beach, we're going to write poetry. And with me and an assistant and 26 kids, we could walk to the beach, sit and write poetry for an hour or two, and come back. And the structure of fear and bureaucracy and worry took over, so that eventually at the school you had to sign up for a bus 3 weeks in advance due to the same trip that I could do spontaneously when I knew it was the right time.
Yeah.
And it was just heartbreaking for me to bump up against those structures that don't allow for a certain fluidity of kindness, a fluidity of being in the moment. This is what my kids needed. They needed to go to the beach and run around and throw sand and write some poetry. And you can't plan that 3 weeks in advance. It doesn't feel the same. To me, anyway, it didn't feel the same.
I understand. So, how do we get back there? who's out there running those schools today that are doing these kinds of things with kids and that can, you know, whose parents understand what it is they're about? And right. Is there anybody doing that anymore? Sure would like to know. And if any of you know of any of them out there that are doing that, you can write to us at bfjradio@gmail.com. It would be great to get a few teachers on the line and have a discussion about kids and kindness and how you nurture and develop that in a classroom. And
you know, there were two things I was thinking about in terms of the way kindness is in the world and or the way consciousness manifests as this evolutionary process and using kindness and using suffering. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering with my own self, where does my kindness manifest without too much pre-thought? I was walking along the creek this morning down by Novato Creek, and I'm behind a place where a lot of homeless hang out. Down by the creek, there's a lot of trash. And I suddenly thought, oh, this would be really fun to bring a group of kids over and give pass out gloves. And then I thought, no, that's too complicated. Mariana and I could put on some gloves and go behind this little homeless thing down by the creek and pick up a bunch of trash, like just make the area pristine again. Not perfect, because there will always be trash, but just in a way of being kind, letting someone experience, oh, this is what a clean place behind where we hang out, this is what it looks like. And it, like, I don't know if I'll do it. It's the point of sort of, is this a thought? Is this me being in the world? Will I ever get Mariana to get gloves on and go down there with me? I don't know how that action comes into wonderful beingness. You know, it's sort of confusing in my own mind about, like, how does that happen in my own life? Will it happen? Is there enough? Like, I don't know if I have enough time to be kind. So that's,
we'll do it this afternoon.
That's, yeah, you never know when we'll do it.
So we're coming to a close at the end of our show, and I want to thank you all, our listeners, for being here today on this show. And I want to thank you, Greg, for coming back. Yep. The hour flew by again, didn't it?
It really did fly by. Yeah. And I hope you notice the kitchen has been cleaner, because I've been working on kindness in the kitchen, as you so kindly pointed out to me.
Okay. To our listeners, thank you so much for joining us. All the beautiful and lovely stuff that came from Greg today and a little window into our kitchen cleaning. our need for kindness in our own family and our request for kindness with each other. So Bread for the Journey is a nonprofit organization that could use your support. If after listening to this show, you find a place in your heart to make a financial contribution, or if you'd like to start a chapter of Bread for the Journey in your town, just go to our website at breadforthejourney.org and explore. You can send an email, connect, and we'd love to connect with you. You can make a donation online, see what it is our chapters are doing out there. We'd love to have a few of you out there come and join us. And I believe that if we all pitch in a little bit, we really can change the world. So I close with this wish. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings be free. See you next week.
We hope our program inspired you this week. Please join Mariana Cacciatore for another edition of Bread for the Journey next Saturday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.